Well, good morning and good afternoon. I'm Elliot Callen, CEO and President of Prosperity Financial Group. This is another edition of Meet the Expert. Welcome. We're still in COVID at this moment, so we're using Zoom, a little bit locked down, although I think we're coming out of it. We'll see what happens in the second or third wave as you watch this. We are with Susan Kay today from MFS. She's the Vice President, and we're very lucky to have her. She's the nationally ranked spokesperson for them. And a vice president. And today she's going to be talking about savvy women make smart investors. So welcome, Susan.
Great to be here with you today, Elliot. I'm so excited about sharing what I know about being a savvy woman and a smart investor. Really excited.
Super. So I know that in the world of savvy women, and this program is designed for people, not just for women, but for men, but they're designed for people that think they're savvy, but can learn a little bit more. They're designed for people that want to become more savvy at what they do. They're designed for people that are married to someone that I think is savvy or married to someone that they'd like to get a little bit more education on what's going on to get savvier. So it's for everyone, not just for women.
I agree with you. We're allies in everything.
Absolutely. So I know that when you're dealing, trying to become a savvy investor, I know we're really going to talk about three major issues. For those that have parents that you're taking care of, we're going to talk about that first because that's a major issue and those are life changes. And then, of course, there's the I, me, my. What about me? A minute from me here. And so we're going to spend the most time on me, meaning how do I become a savvy investor? And, of course, for those of you that are raising children that are younger or even raising adult children like I am, I don't know if they would agree that I'm raising them anymore. They're probably raised. We'll talk about that, too. And I have a 26-year-old daughter in Dallas that just came home for the weekend and with her significant other and was talking about her first townhouse that she purchased and all the financial decisions that they're making. And I don't think 10 years ago she would have made any of those decisions, much less 3 years ago. So those are big changes. So let's talk. Susan, by the way, is an avid hiker, an avid mountain climber. I like to hike, but I think she could go up and down the mountain in the time that I'd still be just about standing in the same place. So we're glad you're here. So let's talk, Susan, first about to the people that have parents. And the parents are just beginning to get a little bit older. Maybe they don't have dementia yet, but they notice a change in their parents. Maybe they're like me and every joint is starting to hurt.
Yeah.
So they're the stairs issue. And we're having conversations about living in a place that's one story. Maybe you need to take their car keys away. And of course, nobody wants to put their parents into an institution. And some of these private ones, you happen to live in Marin County here in California, but you know some of these private ones can be upwards of $10,000 a month.
Yes.
And so that's a certain class of people that can afford that. And for most people, they're not going to be able to make that decision. That money just isn't there. Or maybe they didn't have long-term care insurance. And Medicare doesn't pay for it. That is a misconception there. And Medicare will cover them in a nursing home.
Yep.
So we can talk about that a little bit, and then we'll get on to the individual and how do I personally become a savvy investor and a savvier person, because they're not exclusive. They work hand in hand, making better decisions about money and me. So, Susan, let's get you started here. Let's talk a little bit about the aging parents. I know that it falls on the daughter. When my parents got older and they needed help, and they both passed on now, the burden fell on my sister more than my brother and me. I was a continent away, but still, even if I was there, I think it would have fallen more on my sister. Yeah. I'm not sure why it does that, the daughter-in-law or the daughter, it just does. But let's talk about the becoming smart with our parents. So, you know, we take care of them and we nurture them for what they did for us all those years, but we don't bankrupt the family at the same time.
Right. Super valid point. The financial burdens can be overwhelming. You know, I'm glad you asked about caring for aging parents first, because it's such an important evolutionary piece in terms of our retirement plans, what we've planned for, and maybe sometimes not looking forward and saying, what are the kinds of things might impact my ability to save properly for a retirement plan or to maintain the retirement plan that I've built. I love talking about the non-financial shocks. I can talk about the stock market all day long, but I've learned over time that really it's the life issues that can impede what we're trying to do with someone who's so awesome like yourself in helping us put together a plan. And I'll tell you, caring for aging parents takes planning, and it takes forethought, and it takes a willingness to push our parents just a little bit harder for some more clarity on where they are financially. But let's talk about first some of the challenges that we face. 40 million Americans care for an aging parent in the United States today. And 17% of that group are the female child. That's just the way it is. And here's what I'll describe for you. The effect on women is multifaceted. And it comes with the emotional strain of having to make tough decisions over and over and over again. It's honestly a marathon of new questions that we've never had to deal with before. And that's emotionally taxing. It's exhausting. It's not that we're not capable. It takes a little bit of bite out of our energy and our level. There's also the financial strain of uncovering perhaps a lack of financial wherewithal for our parents. And that's tough because then we have to make different decisions. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But there's also the loss of time. And, you know, we're already working hard to balance, you know, or to create balance in our lives, whether it's because we've got three kids at home right now, or we've got, you know, obligations through book club or hiking club or charity work. And then to have our parents have a piece of their life start to erode where we need to step up. Time is a really precious commodity, and that's an innate feeling that all of us have. And in trying to reparse out where we spend our time is, again, another burden. And I don't want to over-dramatize any of these. Until you've experienced it, you may not know, but these are tough challenges. So what we want to do is be able to map out those challenges and have some solutions in our back pocket. So one of the great challenges that encompasses everything that we're talking about right now is, how do you talk to your parents about these issues? How do you carefully and respectfully learn more about their financial situation so that you're not surprised down the road, so that you understand what might be coming your way? How do you have conversations about them on where are their expectations for living? Should they start to decline? I mean, how do you say that to someone that you love without having them be uncomfortable? How do you talk to your folks about, don't think you should be driving anymore? You know, that's just not going to work in that particular delivery pattern. So let me first recommend to you an amazing tool, one that I found incredibly helpful that was recommended to me. And it's a book, and it's called How to Say It to Seniors by David Solley. S-O-L-L-I-E. How to Say It to Seniors is a fantastic book that by chapter tackles each of those things, each of those conversations we need to have with our parents. And then it gives us four or five different ways of wordsmithing how we want to have that conversation. So you essentially, you get to pick the wordsmithing that suits your personality and your temperament and how you think your parents will receive the question and the information. But it's a lifesaver of a book. How to Say It to Seniors is the first tool that I would share with you that's phenomenal. Another really important book that I can't recommend highly enough is called Another Country, Navigating the Terrain of Our Elders. It's a book that allows you, it's got three great functions. Number one, it allows you to start to learn how it is that your parents are thinking. How do you more effectively stand in their shoes so you have better perspective? It's a book that lays out for you the fact that our parents, as they start to age, even if it's just normal aging dementia, normal aging, we all have to understand as adult children that they have moved to another country. And that when we're with them, we are visiting them in that country. So when we have an impulse to correct them or to shame them or to say, stop saying what, that all that needs to go away. because we are visiting them where they are capable of living, capable of the conversations that they can have, the speed with which they can process information, the speed with which they can respond to us. And I'll tell you what's also great about this book. When I read it, it was a fabulous eye-opener, and it really changed my behavior in such a healthy way. I had my husband read it, my brother-in-law read it, my sister read it, so that when we're at family dinners and one of my parents, typically my mom, she says something that's just kind of wackadoo, under my breath, I will say to my sister, who's about to hyperventilate, another country. And she just kind of calms down and remembers that, that's right, my folks live here, I visit them here, I go back to my world after dinner. So it's just a great, great book. I think you'll find it incredibly valuable. Then there's another tool that's available to you. Elliot has the copies of these. It's called the Aging with Dignity Checklist. And it's so helpful in moderating. The tool itself moderates conversations between you and your parents, or depending on who's listening today, you and your adult children. And it starts out of the 12 questions with the, I'll call them the easier ones. And it'll say things like, what are your plans for your pets should you become infirm? Have that conversation. Talk about it. Open the conversation. What do you envision? What do you want to see? What's going to be helpful? And it works through more complex questions until it gets, closer to the end. You know, if one of the two of you should become infirm, what is your vision? Do you want to stay in the house? And if you stay in the house, you want to move the bedroom down to the family room? What's your vision? Do you envision having somebody come in for 12 hours a day, or we make the guest bedroom a live-in room? Talk to me about what your vision is. It's just a great tool that opens up the hard conversations between parents and adult kids, but it does it in a really nice conversational way.
Have you found that sometimes children are making decisions based on them and not really in the best interest of their parents? I don't really want to take care of my parents. I know their needs are this, but my needs are that. So let's go with my needs. Does that happen?
I think it's very common that adult kids want to be problem solvers. It's this generation. What's the problem? Let's solve it. And that just frankly doesn't work. And it doesn't work best for the whole family dynamic as a whole. It's far better, as you know, Elliot, to have conversations and to try and discern what's going to make them feel the most valued, what's going to make them feel the most well cared for and the most well loved, and what are some of the solutions based on what their own emotional needs are. And that's a far better way to try and make solution-oriented decisions for our parents, no doubt about it.
I know in my family that when my dad had back-to-back heart attacks at age 62, and I knew his driving, something was wrong with his driving before then, maybe he wasn't getting enough blood to the brain. It just, you could tell there was a difference in driving at that point.
Yep.
While the second heart attack put him into a coma, followed by pancreatitis. It just was a really bad year for him, age 62. Yeah. And he didn't live that much longer after that. Very young. But one thing that I'm amazed, my parents are gone 32 and 22 years respectively.
Wow.
And so one of the things that my mother and sister did, my sister was very close to my mother at that time, was they felt that he was unsafe on the road. So while he was recovering from his second heart attack, they sold his car.
Oh.
And he came from a generation that car meant something, that independence.
Absolutely.
It wasn't a muscle car, but it was his car.
Yeah.
I always thought they emasculated him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the bravado. And I see that every now and then. With somebody said to me this weekend, we were talking about their parents, how's your dad doing? And I think her dad was 86. And he says, it's just time for him to go. He's had a good life.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, I wonder if my kids are going to be saying that one day. Dad's had a good life. It's just time for him to die.
Is that happening? I'll tell you, that friend of yours, you need to get them this book that's called Being Mortal. Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. He's a professor at Stanford University. And he wrote this really great book for adult kids to read. And in the last two or three chapters, he talks about how he has that conversation in a healthier way by learning, how does my parent determine and value when they are through? And I think for adult children to understand how their parents in their head, and as an example, he talks about how his father said to his son, if I can't turn the TV on and watch football, and if I can't feed myself ice cream, those are the two parameters by which the quality of my life has declined so much that I'm done. And I know they sound too simple, but I think when you ask people what defines the quality of your life, what are the markers that I as the adult child need to be looking for so that I know when you feel the quality of your life has actually diminished, that's like a super healthy conversation.
It is. I feel like I'm in a Haagen-Dazs commercial with the NFL. Yeah.
That's right. So your friend would benefit from reading the last two chapters of that book, just to get a better handle on how his parent defines the end of their life.
Now, the children, adult children who are taking care of their parents, and then we could get talk about them themselves, but have you found them, Susan, that they can lose themselves in this process?
Oh, without a doubt. Because for most adult children, we want to take care of our parents. We want to be engaged and involved. We want to enrich their life. We want them to have purpose for as long as humanly possible, for however they define, you know, having purpose in their life and meaning. And I think it's important to have a really well-defined balance. I'll give you an example. One of the pitfalls of, you know, being that empathetic adult child is that when a parent becomes disabled in some way, we want to step in and be there and be present and take care of them. Mm-hmm. And yet study after study after study shows it is always better to be the adult child, the loving adult child, with great spontaneous energy than it is to be the caretaker child. In other words, if you have the means, it's better to hire a caretaker to come in for 6 to 8 hours a day. And for you, when you come in, it's a still happy moment for your parent. They're delighted to see you. They're excited that you came at the end of the day. They're engaged with you as the adult child with all those loving memories. If you, the adult child, spend all day taking care of your parents and then maybe turn it over to someone in the evening, you're no longer the beloved, loving adult child. You've become the caretaker. Not a good role. As I said, studies have been done on this over and over and over again by different universities in the United States, and they always reflect that parents would rather have their adult child be their child. So that's something to actually think about and to consider when you're looking at how you want to put this together. I want to go back to the driving question just briefly, though, because you mentioned it and it's really important. One of the things in the book by David Solly that he said that was so interesting to me, he said, it's how you ask the question. It's always about wordsmithing. You know, it's not like, Dad, I want to take your car keys away from you. You know, what's it going to take? It's more like this. Elliot, under what circumstances do you envision deciding not to drive anymore? Describe that circumstance to me. What does that look like to you? And let your parents tell you. It's when I have a car accident, or it's when I lose weakness in my leg, or it's when, let them define it. And in that way, when you see that moment, you're on it, they've already expressed it, it's a conversation that's already been had, and it's a little bit easier for you, the adult child, to kind of step in and make things happen.
I had a good conversation. Go ahead, finish.
What? No, yeah, go ahead.
No, I said I had a good conversation not too long ago with a friend of mine who's a minister of a very large ministry, evangelical ministry.
Got it.
And he had just buried his grandmother, and he was the caretaker for his grandmother, unfortunately, because his parents are not with us anymore. Mm-hmm. And he called me up and he just wanted to talk a little bit to somebody not in that ministry. He didn't want to talk to anybody who he also has to, you know, be the minister.
Interact with.
Yeah. And he said to me, he said, you know, I feel like I did the right thing by taking care of her, but her quality of life at the end was just so bad that I hope it never happens to me. And I said, you know, I know how you feel about the sacredness of life. I get it. Now, how do you feel about that conversation about euthanasia?
Yeah.
And he there was a very long pregnant pause there about euthanasia. And he came back and said, boy, I never thought I'd have a conversation about euthanasia ever in my life. But now I could see the conversation.
Sure. You know, we as a people and culturally, we evolve and we allow ourselves to make different choices. And that's not a judgment for me, right or wrong. It's just we have more choices. And to start with the conversation is the first starting point. There's no doubt about it. You know, Elliot, there are two other tools I want to share with your clients that I think are really important in this conversation and are game changers and incredibly helpful. There's my dad was an avid cyclist, and up until he was 82, he was out riding his bike all over the place. And he lives maybe 20 minutes from me by car. My great joy has always been when he chooses to ride his bike, as the goal is my house. And I have a long driveway with my office at the end of the driveway, so I can see him through the little curtains when he comes. And it just gives me the greatest joy. I love it. It makes my day. Except this one day it was different. I see him, he's coming down my driveway, and he's got his bike in his right hand, and he has a tire in his left hand. And as he gets closer to me, I can see that the tire is folded like a fortune cookie. So now I'm reflecting to him, for those of you who have dogs, I'm giving him what I like to call golden retriever head tilt. I just didn't understand what I was looking at. Unfortunately, as he got closer, I could see that he was bleeding from his head and his shoulder and his leg. And so I jumped out of my chair and I ran to him. And as he saw me, he just let go and he crumpled to the ground. And I was torn between touching him and talking to him and calling 911. And I said, Dad, what happened? And he said, I was hit by a truck and the truck decided not to stop. Then I called 911. And he's fine now. But I'm telling this story to a really good friend in Chicago, maybe 2 weeks later, who says to me, Susan, there is a fabulous tool out there for our elders, particularly active elders. And it's really simple to obtain. It's called Road ID. And on that website, they have Velcro bracelets in every color known to mankind. So for men, you can get the more masculine, you know, navy blue or brown or black or whatever they want. But on every Velcro bracelet is a dog tag, and on just like a dog's collar. And on the dog tag, you can put 4 emergency phone numbers. So I put mine, my husband, my sister, my brother-in-law. And so now when my dad goes out for a bike ride, he has it strapped to his wrist. So should he be less lucky next time, anybody who picks him up can make that phone call. Any hospital can make that phone call. I'll tell you another really great resource for it. We have, unfortunately, Alzheimer's in my family. We got one right away for my uncle. He lives in an Alzheimer's wing within a retirement community. And we had one put on him because there is the possibility he could walk out the door and just start to wander. So it's another good opportunity or another way to utilize them. So Road ID, I think, is a great tool to consider when you've got aging parents. The other one, though, that is equally important is understanding the importance of carrying your parents' healthcare directives, or for those of you who are listening who are older, making sure that your adult children are carrying your healthcare directives on their smartphone. I'll give you a quick example. I live in Northern California, not too far away, in Marin County. And I get a call one day when I'm working in Stockton, and it's from Marin General Hospital. And they say to me, Susan, sorry to make this phone call, but we've got your mother here. She was leading her hiking group today, and she fell down a 15-foot ravine. and she broke a number of bones and we need to make some decisions and we can't get a hold of your father. When can you get here? It's a 2-hour drive. Most of you know that. I got there in an hour and a half and I got to the hospital, found the doctor, and I said, hi, I'm Jean Kay's daughter. Please tell me, what do I need to do? They said, well, we're really sorry, Susan, but we had to sedate your mom. So now we have to ask you a series of questions. I said, okay. Are you in a position of authority to make decisions on behalf of your mother? Yes. Do you have a healthcare directive for your mother? Yes. Can we see it? Well, I didn't come from home. You know, I'm not sure it would have occurred to me to grab it. Never again. There's a wonderful app that you can put on your phone. It's free. It's called Evernote. And what I did is I simply uploaded my mom's healthcare directive to this app. I uploaded a list of the medications she takes, because that was the second question they asked me. And now I have it on me at all times. So if I ever get a phone call on behalf of one of my parents, I can act protectively and powerfully in that moment. I can make decisions on their behalf. I can receive information from the doctors right then and there. So that's one of the great tools, Elliot, I really wanted to share with your audience today, because I think particularly in this time of COVID and quarantining, should an adult child get a call from a retirement home where their parents are, or a hospital, or some other professional agency, they want to be able to act as protectively and strongly as possible on behalf of their parents, because they may not be allowed in the front door. So those are two tools that I wanted to share with your group today.
Great. So Susan, not everybody has parents that they need to worry about, or maybe they're not alive like me, or but you know, the title of this is Savvy Women Make Smart Investors. So yes. Let's talk about the me.
Let's do it.
Let's jump to that, and then we'll just finish with a few minutes about children in general, if we could, because most people are interested in themselves, and I think more people are watching this. How do I become savvy? So sure. Go ahead, tell us as how do I, if I'm a woman, how do I become a savvy investor or a savvy participant in the investment community? If I'm married to one, how do I participate with that? If I'd like my spouse to become savvier, whatever that is,
let's what does that look like?
So go ahead, tell us how to become a savvy investor.
Let's do it. I'll tell you, I have been in the investments industry for 33 years. I would propose to you that I am one of the better investors on Wall Street, but I would also tell you that I have learned to be married and to manage the family's money that actually doesn't work. So I learned 2 decades ago to get a financial advisor, and your clients are lucky they've got you. And I would say, don't ever give that up, because whenever there's a question, I send my husband to you. I do not need to be in control of that. So if you want to be savvy, that'll be the first thing I would tell you. Don't make sure you've got an Elliot in your corner. The second thing that I would say to you is, having been in this industry for so long and worked with so many families across the United States, I'm going to give you my David Letterman top 10 reasons to be successful, or how to be successful, except they're going to be Susan Kay's top 10 ways of being actually savvy at building a retirement plan that'll last throughout your lifetime and perhaps throughout multiple generations. So here we go. I hope you have a pencil. Number one, diversify. If you're working with Elliot, you are diversified. But diversification is probably the number one most important thing you can do as an investor. Because study upon study shows that if you put all your money in large cap stocks, or you put all your money in international stocks, or you heavily weight one investment category over another because you feel comfortable with it, that's a mistake. You want to be equally diversified amongst all the different investment categories that are out there that you are comfortable with. Because what you will find is that over time, over a 10-year, 20-year, 30-year period, a diversified portfolio will have the best performance over any one single category. In other words, it'll offer you better total returns on a consistent basis over a long period of time than if you had chosen the specific category that you think you can't live without and that you love so much. Diversification has proven true mathematically in any time frame you want to pick. Number two, dollar cost average. Now is an interesting time to talk about dollar cost averaging because the concept works like this. As the market declines, if you have cash, that's when you want to buy in. You want to buy in when stocks and mutual funds are on sale. So if you have a habit of buying a little bit over time all the time, then you're never always buying at the high and you're participating in the opportunity of buying when things are on sale. So dollar cost averaging as a strategy is a good rock solid strategy. And it's a particularly good strategy to teach to your kids, whether they're adult kids or teenage kids. It's a great concept to teach them right out of the gate. So I'll tell you who it's really good for is kids who've just graduated from college and are learning to invest and they've got a 401k, and dollar cost averaging is the only way to go. Number three, terms of wisdom. Don't pull your money out of the market when you are scared. Don't. I know I'm asking a lot because I get scared. I don't like watching my assets decline in value. But there have been innumerable studies, the Brinson-Biebauer study, innumerable studies that show those that stay in the market will always outperform those that come out and go back in. That's the proof statement. It happens all the time. So gut it out. Number four, use professional advice. As I mentioned earlier, I go with professional advice. It's a much better way to go because I don't have time to pay attention to what's going on in the marketplace, geopolitically, and what the impact is, any of those kinds of things. Use professional advice because not only do you get great investment advice, but you get great estate planning advice. You get advice on the healthcare directives, the powers of attorney, the trusts, the wills, the legacy plan that gets put in place. Use professional advice all the time. That's what they're there for. Number five, have a plan. You need to have a plan. That's how you succeed, is by having a plan. So have the powers of attorney and the trusts and all those things put in place for your family. Should something happen to you, there's a plan in place for them. Number six, this will be tough for some of you, especially for some of you who have been very successful financially. You still need to have a budget. You need to have a budget. You need to know what you're spending at least once a year. What are you spending? Where's the money going? Because you want to ultimately avoid overspending. You want to be savvy at the investment game. Don't overspend what you've got and what you're making. It's that simple. Number seven, and this is a hard one, really, really hard. Don't support adult kids if you yourself are a borderline saver. Just don't do it. When our kids turn 30, they're adults. They've had enough time to learn how to earn money, how to save money, how to spend properly. If they're failing economically, that's not on you. You do not want to implode your own retirement comfortability by taking care of an adult child who's not working hard enough at figuring it out. So don't support adult kids if you're a borderline saver yourself. Number eight, and this is what we talked about earlier, you need to actually ferret out what the needs of your aging parents are going to look like. Even when they don't want to disclose that to you, you need to push. You need to ask. And you've been given some great tools from the Aging with Dignity checklist to the book by David Solly. You need to ferret out what their needs are going to look like so that your retirement plan doesn't get squished. Number nine, know what your backup plan is if you have to retire before you planned on it. Maybe you have to take care of an aging parent or one of your kids has become suddenly disabled. Once a year, sit down with your partner, grab a glass of wine and talk about, I like to call it, my husband and I play this game, worst case scenario. That's the game we play. Worst case scenario. My parents call me up and they tell me they have to leave the retirement home because they don't have any money. Worst case scenario. What do we do? Do we turn my office that you see here into an Airbnb type of place for them to come live? Do we build out a bedroom on the other end of the house? What kinds of things could we live without? Could we change about our own spending patterns to be able to afford to take care of them? You need to play. I'm not kidding. You need to play the game worst case scenario because you don't want to do it in a time of crisis. Number 10 of my top 10 tools for you are stay educated. That's really important. And I'm going to make it really easy for you. There's a wonderful website called lightbulbpress.com. Lightbulb, like a light bulb. Lightbulbpress.com. And on this website, they have a choice of about 30 to 40 different, I'm going to call them pamphlets. They're workbooks. You know, they're about this size. They're maybe 10 to 15 pages in length. Super easy to read. But they each individually are on some investment topic. So I'm not telling you to order all 30 of them. What I'm saying is, why don't you order one per year and become very well educated and well versed on that subject? So as an example, they have one pamphlet that's what's a stock? And they give you a complete lesson in corporate finance and structure and what's a stock and how we buy them and how we own them. They have another one on what's a bond. And they talk about debt and bonds and bond ownership and the hierarchy of payoff. They have another one on what's a variable annuity, right? They have another one that I like very much on what's a donor advised fund. If your family's philanthropic and you want to create a pool of money where every year you talk and you give money away, what's a donor advised fund? But as I said, they've got like 30 of these to choose from. Just pick one a year and raise your game, becoming a more savvy investor yourself. So, Elliot, those are my top 10 suggestions that I think have made a difference in my life and those of my friends that I talk to and I try and coach them forward.
That's great. We've got it, Susan, that's great. We've got about a minute left. And so would you, for those that have children, they're raising their children, let's not call them adult children anymore, but they're raising them in 1 minute or less, what's the best advice you can give them?
Sure. That's easy. The best advice I can give you for raising children, regardless of they're six or they're 60, is transparency. We need to be more transparent about money. If you don't want to talk about assets, that's fine. But you need to be talking about money with your kids and spending and saving and investing and how you think about those things. You need to share your life lessons with them because they will not learn without an example. And if we continue to be like our parents were, where we play our cards very close to the vest and we don't share anything, we're not raising financially capable individuals. So my answer to you would be full transparency.
Well, this has been great. We've been talking with Susan Kay. She's with MFS, and she's been a great resource for all of us here. And we've talked about savvy women make smart investors. So if you have questions or concerns, my email address is Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at Prosperity, F. Like in Frank, G like a George, prosperityfg.com. Send me an email. Take a look at our website, www.prosperityfg.com. And we look forward to seeing you again on Meet the Expert. Have a great day.